34. When Gwen and Britt the younger remembered that Jeff borrowed large portions of the dragon's code from sheep, they asked the four experienced shepherds they had been hanging around with how they herded sheep. It just seemed like the obvious solution. They learned that herding sheep was challenging out in the open, but could be made much easier using pens, gates, and trained dogs. Applying this knowledge to their current problems seemed, again, like the obvious solution. The dragons were much larger than sheep, so the pen needed to be that much larger as well. The dragons could fly, so the pens needed to be three-dimensional. Those parameters, combined with Britt's love of crafting large structures out of molecularly perfect diamond, led to the sight of five dragons swirling around chaotically inside a mammoth crystalline cube, which itself hovered motionless above the Scottish Highlands. It perfectly illustrated the idea that a long series of obvious solutions can lead to an improbable result. Trained dogs were indispensable to the process, but they posed two problems. Dogs were quite small and couldn't fly. While Britt worked on the diamond cube, Gwen set about solving the dog problem. The Scotsmen happily agreed to lend Gwen the use of their dogs on the condition that no harm would come to them. She selected the four best and got to work. Gwen pieced the macro together using bits of existing macros, assets from old video games, and a rough flight steering mechanic controlled by measurements of how fast the dog ran and what direction it pointed its nose. When she finished, she applied the macro to the dogs. The results were not promising. The four mixed-breed sheepdogs instantly disappeared, replaced by four identical winged horses, all of which appeared to be wading chest-deep through the solid ground while flapping their wings. She made the Pegasus shells transparent when viewed from the inside, so the dogs were oblivious to their own appearance. They each ran around chasing the strange flapping winged creatures that they didn't realize were their fellow dogs. They scooted around on the ground like bumper cars, emitting barking and growling noises. Gwen worried that they would never discover that they could fly. But then one of the dogs looked up, for whatever reason, and rose into the air. Of course, it stopped dead in its tracks as soon as it realized what it had done. The animated Pegasus hovered 2 feet above the ground, looking noble, but emitting a frightened, whining noise. All of the other dogs looked up at it, and they all rose above the ground as well, also screeching to a halt and whining pitifully. She was just about to pull the plug on the experiment and try to think of something else, when one of the winged horses slowly inched forward. It angled down, back into the ground, ran a few steps, then lifted back into the air. It repeated these touch-and-go maneuvers several times, with increasing speed and confidence. The other dogs followed suit, and less than half an hour after discovering that they could fly, the dogs were playing with each other in the air, every bit as gracefully as they had on the ground. A quick transportation spell later, the crystalline cube full of flying dragons was a crystalline cube full of dragons and winged horses. It would have looked like a poster on a bookish girl's bedroom wall if not for the four screaming Scotsmen standing beneath the cube, shouting orders and encouragement that their dogs could not hear and did not need. Despite the complete unreality of the situation, the dogs' herding instincts kicked in just as firmly as the sheep dragons' grass-eating instincts. The flying horses flanked and outmaneuvered the dragons easily, and soon they had the dragons flying laps of the sphere's interior, as if it had all been choreographed in advance. As the dragons gathered toward one end of the cube, Britt made a diamond wall slide forward, trapping the dragons in a smaller space, much as a gate would in a pen. Britt conjured up a goal and decorated it with an immense wooden gate, in hopes that the sheepdogs piloting the winged horses would recognize it as a good place to herd the dragons. She held one end of the gate and flew in a quarter circle, swinging the gate open. She noted with satisfaction that the giant hinge even squeaked convincingly. The dogs took notice, directing the dragons directly toward the goal. They no longer seemed afraid of it as they had when it appeared directly in front of them while they were flying full speed. Then again, Britt thought, pretty much anything appearing out of thin air right in front of your face when you're flying full speed is bound to scare the crap out of you. The dragons flew through the goal, probably expecting to come out the other side like they would have any other gate. Instead, they were obliterated. Each Pegasus peeled off well before reaching the gate, but Brit had been ready with a force field if they hadn't. As soon as the final dragon sailed through the goal into nothingness, she quickly eradicated the goal as well, just to prevent any accidents. The men far below cheered themselves hoarse. Gwen drifted over to Brit. Brit said, "I must say your what's the plural of Pegasus?"
"Winged horses," Gwen said. "Unless you want to sound silly."
"Fair enough. They did a great job."
"I know, right?"
Of course, watching them work, it did occur to me that they weren't really necessary. Once we had the dragons trapped in the cube, we could have just put the goal at one end and made the walls close in until the dragons had nowhere else to go. Gwen thought about this for a moment, then said,
"Yeah, well, this way looked a lot cooler."
The two sorceresses landed in front of the cheering men. Brit erased the diamond sphere while Gwen brought the winged horses back down to Earth, then deactivated the macro, turning them back into earthbound dogs. The dogs received a hearty round of pets, rubs, ear scritches, and attaboys. But they still looked severely put out that they could no longer fly. Brit checked the dragon map, which confirmed that Scotland was free of dragons. As a courtesy, they flew the men to a spot about 1 hour walk from their village. There they said their goodbyes. "Jock," Brit said, "you're a strong man and a good leader. Koira is a lucky woman, and little Effie and Nessa are fortunate to have you for a father." Gwen continued,
"And Kyle, you're a stalwart friend and a fearsome warrior. We were all worried when you fell injured, but we should have known it would take more than dragons to tear you away from your morag. Keep watch over little Rut. If she grows to be half as lovely as her mother, you'll be fighting off boys with a stick."
Kyle blushed slightly and said,
"One day, mayhap, but it'll be quite a while before I face those kinds of problems."
Mungo said,
"I'm not so sure. I think my Torkoal may have designs on young Rut."
Kyle said,
"Torkoal's a fine lad."
Mungo said,
"Thank you."
Kyle said,
"Keep him away from my little girl."
Mungo laughed. Brit interrupted the decidedly downhill flow of the conversation, quickly saying,
"Mungo, dear Mungo, in many ways, I may miss you most of all. Please know that you have both Gwen's and my respect and friendship."
Mungo nodded. Gwen cleared her throat. Brit looked at Gwen, who tilted her head toward Mungo and widened her eyes. Brit spent half a second seething at Gwen, then continued.
"And do give our best to your little ones, Ginny, Shonok, and Torkoal, and your wife Grizel."
Mungo smiled, as did Gwen as she looked at the last man remaining.
"Leslie, you're the youngest man here, but you're as brave and capable as any of your friends. Go home and make a good life for yourself with Donalda."
She paused, then stuck a finger in his face.
"And for everybody's sake, especially your own, you stay away from Morag."